people from the International Red Cross who moved in after the fighting. Their reports and appeals to international bodies to stop the bloodshed and help victims generated stormy debates in the press, as well as in the British Parliament and the US Congress. Indeed, the tragedy of the refugees was at the center of Bernadette's report and recommendations through the foregoing. Therefore, is the truth concerning the historical background of one of the most emotional and bitter issues involved in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the Palestinian refugees. As mentioned earlier, this is an issue that has remained unresolved for more than 40 years. The importance of the disclosures from Ben-Gurion's war diaries and other recently declassified documents cannot be overestimated. The conclusions reluctantly arrived at by Flappin in his book The Birth of Israel, Myths and Realities are so startling, and the implications so far-reaching, that Flappin's own words have been used as much as possible in stating the facts, which from any other source than Simmer Flappin would be his book is essential reading for anyone desiring a true perspective on the Israeli-Palestinian crisis. And especially the plight of the Palestinian following the War of Independence. No progress was made in solving the Palestinian refugee problem, and an uneasy period of no war and no peace lasted until the Sinai War with Egypt in 1956. In 1952, a military junta overthrew the Egyptian monarchy, which led to, as a matter of policy, Egypt had always denied Israeli ships the right to use the Suez Canal. However, in 1956, Nasser also closed off Israel's access to the Gulf of Aqaba through the Straits of Tiran. Israel retaliated by launching a preemptive strike into the Sinai, and, in conjunction with French and English forces, captured the Suez Canal, and also opened the sea route to Aqaba. Under the agreement which ended the fighting, Israel agreed to withdraw from the Sinai on condition that Egypt would not remilitarize it, and that UN peacekeeping forces be deployed in the Sinai to police the truce agreement. This arrangement lasted until 1967. On May 15, 1967, Nasser abruptly invaded and remilitarized the Sinai and again closed the Straits of Tiran to Israeli shipping. He ordered the UN peacekeeping force to leave the Sinai, and the UN force quickly complied. Jordan, Iraq, and Syria expressed their support of Egypt. On June 5, 1967, Israel launched a surprise air attack on Egypt and completely destroyed the Egyptian air force on the ground. In 6 days, the Israeli army captured and occupied all of Jerusalem, the entire West Bank and Gaza, and the Syrian Golan Heights, and reoccupied all of the Egyptian. Following the cessation of hostilities, the United Nations adopted the famous Resolution 242. Among the basic provisions of the resolution was the recognition by the parties of the inadmissibility of acquiring territories by war, and the necessity for the withdrawal of Israeli armed forces from territories occupied in the 1967 Six-Day War. The status of these conquered and occupied territories, which were populated by more than 1.5 million Palestinians, became the fundamental issue involved in the Middle East conflict. This issue, except for the Sinai question, which was settled by the Camp David Accords, remains unresolved after 22 years. The Israeli victory and the 1967 war also had other far-reaching consequences. Most importantly, it caused the Israeli people to have a new feeling about themselves. The euphoria which accompanied this spectacular victory caused many to believe that Israel was invincible. Johnson, in his History of the Jews, describes this new attitude, particularly as it affected the rise of the radical nationalist Land of Israel movement. There were many Jews who saw Israel's repeated victories as a moral mandate for wider boundaries. For pious Jews it was the hand of providence, for secular Jews, a form of manifest destiny. In 1968 the Sephardi chief rabbi argued that it was a religious obligation not to return the newly conquered territories. The same year the Kibbutz Dati, representing the religious collectives, intoned a prayer for Independence Day, "Extend the boundaries of our land, just as thou hast promised our forefathers, from the river Euphrates to the river of Egypt. Build your holy city, Jerusalem, capital of Israel, and there may your temple be established as in the days of Solomon." Dr. Harold Fish, rector of Bahrainan University, insisted, "There is only one nation to whom the land belongs in trust, and by covenant promise, and that is the Jewish people. No temporary demographic changes can alter this basic fact, which is the bedrock of the Jewish faith. Just as one wife does not have two husbands, so one land does not have two sovereign nations in possession of it." The 1967 victory also produced a multi-party movement known as the Jacharet AND of Israel, which argued that it was not within the moral authority of the Israeli state, representing only Israeli citizens, to give up any conquered portion of the Promised Land, since this was the property of the entire Jewish people, and must be preserved for their eventual ingathering or aliyah. Emphasis. Supplied. The October 1973 war, 6 years had passed since the UN Resolution 242 was adopted, which required Israel to withdraw its forces from the lands conquered and occupied in the 1967 war. Although Israel had ostensibly accepted the resolution, no effort was being made by Israel to comply with its terms or to withdraw its forces from the Sinai and the West Bank and Gaza. Anwar Sadat, then president of Egypt following Nasser's death, was under great pressure from the Egyptian militarists to renew the war with Israel and recapture the Sinai. On October 6, 1973, the Egyptian army crossed the Suez Canal in force and attacked and broke through the Israeli Barlev line. Simultaneously, the Syrians broke through the Israeli lines on the Golan Heights. This brief war is described by Johnson, an element of technological surprise and the effectiveness of Arab anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles enabled them to inflict disturbing losses on Israeli planes and armor. For the first time in the quarter century of the state's existence, Israel faced the possibility of a major defeat and even of a second Holocaust. But the Syrian advance had been stemmed on the 9th of October, the next day, in response to desperate Israeli pleas. The American English American President, Richard Nixon, began an emergency airlift of advanced weapons. 2 days afterwards, the Israeli forces began an audacious counterattack on Egypt, crossing onto the west bank of the canal, and threatening to cut off all the advancing Egyptian forces in Sinai. This was the turning point, and Israel moved swiftly towards a victory as decisive as that of 1967, when a ceasefire came into force on the 24th of October. The last of the five Israeli wars, the war in Lebanon, 1982-83, will be discussed briefly in Chapter 10 in its chronological sequence. Chapter 5: The Search for Peace. And not long after the October 1973 war between Israel, Syria, and Egypt, President Gerald Ford took office with the Middle East situation high on his agenda. The failure of previous administrations to achieve a peaceful settlement of the Middle East conflict had not been for any lack of effort on the part of the US. Every administration since, and including Nixon's, has vainly tried to develop a plan or program to bring about a peaceful solution to the dangerous deadlock between Israel and the Palestinians, which poses a constant threat to world peace. While it may appear that the issues dividing the Palestinians and the Israelis are highly complex, the chief problem is not their complexity, but the simple fact that the fundamental positions of the two antagonists, as they stand, are irreconcilable. Given the situation, the repeated efforts of the US to mediate the dispute have been frustrated, because there never has been any prospect of success. Without exception, each new administration has begun with high hopes of bringing about a peaceful resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian impasse, but finally gives up in the face of Israeli intransigence or Palestinian factionalism. But mostly, because of the lack of political will on the part of the US, this continuing exercise in futility is referred to euphemistically as the peace process. The humiliation suffered by Egypt in the Six-Day War of 1967 was eased by the fact, mentioned earlier, that the Egyptian army, in the 1973 war, had successfully crossed the Suez Canal, breached the Israeli defenses, inflicted heavy casualties, and might have won the war had not the US come to Israel's rescue by a massive airlift of arms, armor, and planes from the US, and from our NATO military arsenal. It is generally agreed that, only because of Egypt's initial military successes in the war, which saved Egypt's pride, could Sadat, in 1977, have made his dramatic peace overtures to Israel without appearing as a supplicant. Following the 1973 war, Israel intensified its colonization efforts in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, and Sinai by hastening the building of new settlements. The Arabs were